And now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Angela from the mean streets of San Carlos.
I'm going to keep coming back. I'm Angela and I am an alcoholic. Can you guys hear me okay? How about way in the back? Well, thank you so much for asking me to speak tonight. I'm definitely an alcoholic, and I'm also a drug addict, and I know there's a lot of times I hear read in AA meetings it says, share your experience related to alcohol. And I've got to let you know that my drug use is definitely related to my alcoholism. For me, they're very related. So you're going to hear me talk a little bit about that, and I hope you won't be offended. But if you are, you can go write about it or talk to your sponsor or something like that. That's what they tell me if I don't like something. So anyway, I grew up around drugs and alcohol. And my dad was an alcoholic, and he was also a rageaholic. And my parents were divorced before I was one. And my mother was into drugs but not into alcohol because her dad, I came from a long line of alcoholics on both sides. So she said, you know, it's okay to, she always had this philosophy, it's okay to smoke pot, but you don't want to drink because you don't want to be an alcoholic like your dad or my dad. And that made sense to me because when I saw people drink, they were mean and unpredictable, and when they were smoking pot, they seemed pretty friendly and nice. So, you know, I was like, cool with that. And by the time I was 14, I was smoking pot on it. I liked it so much, I did it all the time. I'm like, this stuff's great, you know? I think everybody should smoke. I mean, I was totally that person, you know? And it was really great for a little while, and I think in some ways it helped me through the insanity at home, because by then my mom was doing a lot of pain pills and a lot of cocaine on top of her pot use, and it was pretty insane. And I thought I had arrived. You know, it numbed me, and I loved it. It was fantastic. And then shortly thereafter, by the time I was 15, I graduated to a lot harder stuff. You know, I went through started doing cocaine and went through a round of acid, which I thought was fantastic and colorful. And, you know, I wanted to know the meaning of life. You know, I was always kind of a deep thinker. So I thought, oh, I'll find the meaning of life. And I often would during the trip, but the next day it didn't really make sense. So I kept trying to find it again, you know, and one day I took a lot of acid and I wasn't coming back down. And I was with some friends who knew my sister, and they called her and said, you got to come get your sister because she's lost her mind. And when she came to pick me up, I actually didn't recognize her. And I had lost my mind, you know, and I've heard a lot of stories of people that took trips and didn't come back down. And by then I was 2 months shy of 17, and they brought me to the psych ward. And I spent a couple days there, and I remember the only thing I could think to do, because I remember there was a little part of me, I thought I was in purgatory at the time. That's what I remember during that period of time. And it felt that way. And I remember just doing Jesus Loves Me This. I know I'm not a religious person today, but I'm, you know, down with the whole concept. And at the time, that's all I could think of, because I was looking for the light. Because I didn't want to die, and I didn't want to be in the dark, but I was stuck in this in-between place. So I came back to myself, I guess you'd say, and they sent me, after I came back down, they sent me to adolescent rehab for 30 days, and I called it like a Gucci rehab, you know, it was like, they didn't talk about the 12 steps or anything like that, it was just like art and therapy and groups, and which was fine, I just wasn't ready. You know, I got out of there, and I decided I just better not do acid anymore because I'm not very good at it. And so I went back to just smoking pot and by then doing crystal because I didn't understand why people did coke. I preferred crystal. I thought it made more sense. It lasts longer. You know, I don't know. I could actually go do stuff instead of just talking about it. And I liked it. It was working for me. You know, and then it wasn't working for me. You know, somehow I graduated. I'm not really sure how, but I did. And I was living on my own, and I had decided I was going in the military because I needed to get away from drugs. You know, my mom's best friend was a big dealer. They were grooming me for that lifestyle because I was almost 18. By then, I think I just turned 18. And And I was thinking, you know, there's got to be another way than this lifestyle. But I didn't know. Like, I just didn't want to feel. I didn't know how to deal with the pain. I thought it was fun. I was just doing it for fun. But, it got to the point where I was up for, it felt like a whole year. And I was starting to lose myself, you know. So I thought, I think I'm going to go in the Navy. And, you know, looking back on it, I think I got that idea when I was, like, 10 when I saw Private Benjamin. Because I wondered, well, you know, one day it hit, I had this epiphany. I'm like, yeah, and I was really disappointed because in the Navy you don't, like, crawl, you know, through obstacle courses and stuff. They just make you do a lot of sit-ups, push-ups, and running in place. So anyway, I did go there, and for 2 months during boot camp I was clean, you know, and I felt good, and I was ready for anything. And I thought, this is like child's play. I mean, they can't touch me. They just try to mess with your head. It was nothing compared to what I grew up with. But then I got out of there, and I started drinking with some friends. And that's where alcohol steps in. You know, I wanted to get away. And for me, I was a periodic drinker. But I didn't realize, see, I could drink. Like, I worked with, you know, divers and SEALs, and I'd be shot for shot with all the guys, you know. And I didn't realize that meant I was an alcoholic if I could hold my liquor. I thought the people that were sloppy, you know, like, I'm like, oh, you're so sloppy, you really have a problem. You know, you got to pull it together. And I could drink a lot, you know. However, you know, and I did okay. I was in for 3 years. I kind of didn't get any trouble. I didn't cough or anything, really, is what happened. And I got out, and 2 weeks later, it was totally happenstance. You know, I was in my local bar, and the bouncer looked like Mr. Crystal. He became my new best friend, you know. So on top of drinking now, I'm back to doing. It was interesting. They talk about the progression of the disease. And even though I hadn't done drugs for 3 years, the progression of it was right there, as though I had continued to do it for that long. So now I'm switching off, you know, and I did for the next couple of years. I switched, you know, like, this isn't working, I'll try a different kind of drug, or I'll do this, or I'll do that, or, you know what I mean? Like, this isn't working, I was constantly playing the chemist, I'm up too high, I go down, up, down, up, down, you know, trying to find this place, you know, and I don't know exactly what I was looking for, but I remember being a teenager and feeling this pit in my gut and going, oh, if I could just rip that feeling out, then I'd be okay. And I'd try to fill it with drugs and alcohol and people and whatever, you know, and things would work for a little while, and then they stopped working. You know, so I tried something else. And that was, I got sober in July 15th, 1996. So I'm 37. I was 24 at the time. But for the next, at the time now, I'm 21. Okay, in the next couple of years, I lived in 4 states in 2 years, in the last 2 years of my using, because I kept thinking it'd be better somewhere else. You know, like, oh, this isn't working for me, I'm getting into trouble, I need to go over here, or over there, or over here. And needless to say, I ended up back in Pennsylvania, where I'm originally from, because I was living in New York City, and I thought that was my problem. I mean, I was introduced to stuff I'd never even heard of, I thought it was fantastic, but I also thought I was losing my soul. So I thought, I better move one more time, you know, I'll go to this smaller town, and everything will be cool. So I moved back to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and I work at a college bar, you know, and it was fantastic, you know, like, and I actually lived right behind there, which was very convenient, because I didn't have a license at the time. And, you know, I swore, this is the other thing I grew up with, because the first time I ever did cocaine was with my mom's best friend and his girlfriend, and the rule there was, you know, it's okay to snort it, but don't smoke it or shoot it. And that made sense to me, you know, because I'm just going to snort it like a lady, you know. And of course I was. So what happened was, the best thing that ever happened to me, and again, I recognize this as an A meaning, but the best thing that ever happened to me is that, one, I couldn't find any crystal, which was crystal and pot were my drug of choice, the combination. Because alcohol made me sloppy and unpredictable, and I didn't like not being in control. And however, every time I couldn't get drugs, guess what I was doing? Drinking a lot. So everyone I worked with was smoking cocaine. And I swore I'd never do that. But I was drunk one night, and it was a good idea. So I started doing that, and I want to say it was about 8 months before I got sober. It took all the fun out of my partying that was left, which wasn't much anyway, and any hesitation that I had whether I was an addict or alcoholic or not was gone. And I remember calling the VA, and I said, I want to go to your rehab program. And they're like, well, we don't know if you qualify. You know, you've got to talk to the supervisor. And I told him the truth. I'm drinking and smoking crack every day. And he said, okay, you can come in on Monday. And it was Friday. I'm like, Monday? That's a really long time now. I mean, that is a long time in my world. And I said, okay. And you know what? I did it again over the weekend. In fact, I told my dad. He was going to pick me up. I was going to move out of that apartment because I wanted to get away from there. And I said, I'm going to, you know, pack up my stuff. And then I called him again. So I have dinner with my friends. It's like Saturday night. Maybe I'll call you at 8 o'clock at night. And I ended up calling him at 5 o'clock Sunday morning when I finally couldn't find any more crack, that is. Anyway, needless to say, I did have him pick me up at 5 o'clock Sunday morning. And I stayed at his house and probably took a little nap because I was a little tired from being up for a long time. And he brought me to the VA rehab. And there I was, the youngest person there. I was barely 24, the only girl out of 13 people. They were mostly Vietnam vets, and I felt at home. And they talked about the 12 steps, and they brought meetings into us and brought me, you know, me to meetings. And I instantly felt, because what happened two weeks before I made that call to get sober, that pit that was in my stomach had encompassed my whole body, and I felt totally empty. And I was out of suggestions for myself. You know, I've always been solution-oriented, you know, and I ran out of solutions to fix myself. And so I did that whole God, please help me prayer 2 weeks before I got sober. So I'm in that rehab, and I instantly felt warm and comfortable, and I felt at home. And I was like, I'm Angela, I'm an addict, you know, because I really hadn't drank a whole lot in the last year, not compared to, you know, my Navy days or a little bit after that. And this guy came into H&I, which is hospitals and institutions. He came into the rehab to share his story. And he said, I've been in here 3 times for drugs. And every time I thought I had a drug problem, but I didn't think I had an alcohol problem. So I go out and drink, and eventually the alcohol led me back to drugs. And that was the best thing I could have ever heard. It was like God was channeling. He was channeling God for me to tell me this. Because I had, like I said, a week and a half, I wanted to be there. I wanted to be sober. I never really thought about alcohol either way. Because I thought an alcoholic was someone like my dad, who drank Jack Daniels every day and was prone to violence. You know, and I had to change my preconceived notion as to what an alcoholic was to fit into that. Because how low do I need to go? You know, I could see myself going back out there and going, well, anyway, in that moment, I thought about it and I said, you know, I did have 2 DUIs in 30 days. Because I lived in New Jersey for 6 months before I went to New York. And then I remember, you know, I did have a lot of blackouts when I was in the Navy. A lot of times I was like, and I just kind of laughed it off, like, oh, how did I get home? Or I remember doing that sailor swagger, you know, that people joke about, like down the pier going back to the ship, you know, because I was in Italy at 19. I could drink in the bars and, you know, you kind of get a pass when you're 19, though. You don't look as sloppy as you do when you get older, you know. So I didn't really think I had a problem because in the Navy I was surrounded by alcoholics, you know. I didn't really think about it until that moment, and I went, oh, my God, I'm an alcoholic, too. It's just not my drug of choice. But I've got to be honest with you. I'm not going to share, you know, every dark thing I ever did, but the worst things I've ever done and the most trouble I've ever gotten into was all related to alcohol, all of it. You know, so needless to say, I'm in there, and it was really great. In fact, the day that I was leaving, because I lived pretty close to the Puerto Rican neighborhood, and I used to have to keep going, getting in one more. I don't know if you know that feeling. You know, I got to get one more, whether it's 6 o'clock in the morning or not, and you're the only, you know, young white girl in the neighborhood. Needless to say, this really nice guy said, I remember you. I'm leaving rehab. I think I'm scared to leave, actually, because I thought I can stay sober in here, but I don't know if I can in the real world. And this guy said, I know you. And I'd never seen him before in my life. He said, I used to see him and think, what is that little girl doing? She's going to get herself killed. And I didn't care. I didn't care. because the only thing I cared about was running away. You know, I wanted to numb. I cared about more. Just wanted more. You know, I had no love for myself. And I realized that that's what that was, you know, that pit in my stomach. The only thing that I've found in recovery to fill that is love. You know, and I, the only person that can give that to me, because even in recovery, I've tried to find that outside of myself too, is from me and my higher power, that I was able to choose for myself, you know. And you guys told me I could find a God of my own understanding, and that worked for me, you know, because I had some religious experiences that were uncomfortable for me. And I remembered, you know, like I picked kind of a hippie kind of God, which still works for me, kind of a Native American thing, you know, it's love and light, and that works for me. And it still does, you know, and I'm really grateful for that. So I got out, my dad picked me up, and we went on a holiday for a week. I went to my first meeting in Niagara Falls and my second one in Canada, and I realized, you know, there's meetings all over. And I went to a meeting every day because you guys told me to do that when I first got sober. And I decided, I was working in a bar, and I decided to work in this, I was in Virginia now. I did my last geographic in early sobriety, well, maybe once more when I came here, but I went to Virginia, and I was working in a spiritual store during the day and going to meetings every night. I mean, I tried everything. I did shamanic journeys and drumming and you name it. I tried it because I wanted to understand what this was all about, you know. So I sought it just like I sought the dark side, you know, when I was out there drinking and using. And I tried other programs, but I felt most at home in AA. You know, I tried the the sister program because I thought, you know, I did drugs maybe more, but I felt at home here, and I know that I'm an alcoholic. And I ended up moving out here when I had 9 months sober, and I'm really, really grateful for my life today. I mean, I can't believe, to be honest with you, I can't believe I'm standing here with 13 years of sobriety, because my greatest milestone for me was 30 days. I could not believe that I could put 30 of them in a row, like all together at the same time. It was just not... It wasn't part of my experience for a really long time. Anyway, I'm going to tell you a little bit about why I'm still sober, you know. And I can tell you, if I tell you 10 or 12 things, I actually don't have a list, but I'm going to tell you a bunch of things. Had I eliminated one or two of those, would I still be sober? Perhaps. I don't know. But I know that I'm still sober today, so if you want what I have, I suggest to do what I did. And that's what I heard from somebody else. But I know immediately... I saw those people that had the light on in their eyes, and I wanted what they had. So those are the people I wanted to spend time with. And I wanted to, and I hung around women, you know, and I found women who had what I wanted, you know, and I found a sponsor. And, you know, I went to meetings every day, and I ended up doing the steps, and I've done them a couple of times. And it's more than that, like, more than just doing the steps, like, I learned to apply them to my life. You know, when I first came in, though, and I saw the steps, it was, you know, the 12 steps were on the wall, which they're over there. And I was like, yeah, I'm really glad they're in order for a reason, because I said, yeah, I want to do 1 and 9. Like, I'm really effed up, and I'm really sorry about it. You know? If I was ready to tell you, oh, yeah, I'm just, like, awful. You know, I was ready to tell everybody that, and I'm sorry to everybody. I'm really, really glad they're in order for a reason. Because by the time I got to 9, I had a better understanding of what that was all about. You know, so I didn't have a problem with the God concept because you told me I could pick one on my own. But I did realize later, much later, because they talk about more will be revealed. And really, my recovery is an unfolding. You know, some of the stuff I got quickly, some of it slowly. You know, now that I have some time, I understand a lot of these phrases a lot more. And that concept came to me really quickly. But how to surrender, like I could surrender my alcohol and drug addiction, no problem, because I was not doing well with that at all. So I had no problem in surrendering that. But how about the rest of my life? You know, and I was pretty, I don't know if it was that I was young or it just took me a while to figure it out, but I realized one day that, you know, I really do love this higher power that I've picked. And I know the higher power loves me, you know. And, think that I don't see why I can't trust him more, so I prayed about that, you know, like I'd like to trust you more and know you more, because there I was with 9.5 years of sobriety, and I hit an emotional bottom. Like I didn't want to go out and drink and use, and I didn't necessarily want to die, but I was in so much pain from all the stuff I had hidden from myself, through the drugs and alcohol, and it was coming up, and I didn't know how to deal with it, you know, and I was trying to do therapy and meetings, and I'm like, I'm doing everything right, I want my happy, joyous, and free, you know, like I was really pissed, upset. Anyway, I prayed about it. I got on my hands and knees and prayed, you know, God, please help me, just like I did before I got sober. I had that same bottom. And I finally realized that I needed to surrender more. Like, I needed to really ask, help me to trust you more. Whatever that is, that higher power, because I'm still trying to run the show. I started reading that book again, and like I'd never read it before, and I was like, oh, I used to feel really sorry for those people who were, you know, too smart for their own good, and I would feel sorry for you if you were one of those people, and then one day I realized I was that person, you know, and I didn't know it. That's the thing. I had no idea, and you just don't know until you know, you know. So anyway, I am grateful for that moment, because I said, I call my higher power God. And I said, God, you know, help me to trust you. And I didn't realize how many issues I had with trust. And I didn't trust myself, you know, in a lot of ways. I knew I could stay sober, but that was kind of as far as I knew, you know. And I didn't realize how much suffering I created in my own life in sobriety. You know, I mean, life is still in session, you know. I definitely know there's ups and downs, and we experience all the different range of emotions and experiences, and that's okay, but how I deal with them, you know, like I actually had to adjust how I prayed. For like 9.5 years, I'd figure out what needed to happen, and then I'd say, God, please help me with that, you know, and I didn't know, so I think I got a pass for like the first 8 years, but that year and a half after that was a bit shaky, and started not working, just like other things, because it was time for me to upgrade and realize that, hey, you know what? If I'm going to stay sober, like, I didn't understand. Like, when I first got here, I met someone with 6 years, and I thought, man, they must be, like, some right hand of God. They have 6 years, you know what I mean? And then I realized that particular person happened to be quite sick, actually. So I realized that time doesn't equal wellness. It's like what we do with our time, you know? And so I could see how people with time can go back out. And I know for me, if I don't continue to work on myself as this stuff comes up, you know, I put myself in jeopardy of going back out. And I don't want to do that. And every time I meet someone who has gone back out, I ask them, why did you go back out? What happened? You know, I want to know, because I want to learn from your experience. When I was younger, I had to make all the mistakes myself. I still make a lot of mistakes, and I can use them as learning experiences, but that's one I really hope I don't have to make, you know. So I try to learn from other people, and it's great to keep going back to meetings to hear that. So that person with 6 years that I didn't think was very well did say something quite profound to me, though. I had about 4 months sober, and I didn't have a car or a license because I had lost it with those couple DUIs. So I worked and lived really close to a lot of meetings right near the beach. And I just could not stop thinking about using and drinking. And I thought, I'm screwed. And I remember going to this meeting and saying to this person, I don't think I'm going to make it. And he said, why not? And I go, well, I can't stop thinking about drinking and using. He said, do you know why you're thinking like that? And I said, no. He said, because you're an alcoholic and an addict. And I went, oh. Yeah, I mean, it was so simple, right? It's the simple stuff. You know, I'm too smart for my own good. I really didn't get it. I didn't know. But I needed to hear that. I needed to hear it, and it made sense to me. And I went, oh, just because I think it doesn't mean I have to do it. Also seems pretty simple to maybe other people, but not to me. I went, oh, what a concept. And then one of the greatest things, this is one of the greatest tools that have kept me sober, and that is the ability to think it through. Because there have been lots of times over the years where I thought about, my disease will tell me, well, you could have a glass of Merlot like a lady. And then I'd play the tape out. In the beginning, it took me a while. I'd paint the picture. Okay, I'd have that glass of wine. Then what would I do? And then what would I do? Now I can just go, oh, okay. Glass of Merlot, smoking crack. Maybe shooting heroin, because I never did that. You know, maybe I'll try that. And then I go, yeah, that's not a good idea. And I don't have to do it. Because I go through the experience before I ever pick it up. But I have to play that tape out because it doesn't mean I'm not going to think about it. And I sometimes still have dreams about it, and I'm always being sneaky and shady. And, you know, I wake up questioning if I'm really sober or not, you know. But I am. You know, I still have a mind that wants to kill me. So I've got to keep it in check, and I have to keep doing the work for me. If I want to stay, I don't want to just not drink and use. Like, I want to be well, and I want to be happy. So the other greatest thing that I learned was the ability to pause. And I never knew how to do that before. You know, just I would react immediately because I was always in the solution. You know, like I got two DUIs in New Jersey, so I thought, well, I will move to New York City because you don't need a car there, you know. And the same thing was happening in sobriety, you know, thinking faster than I could speak. And I realized that I could pause. You know, and there's a lot of magic that happens in those couple seconds, especially if I get upset, you know, or I'm upset with somebody else. I can take a deep breath and I can pause and I could say to myself, does this person really deserve all the venom I'm about to give them? Usually the answer is no. Actually, it's always no now. When I was younger in my sobriety, I was a little more feisty. But, you know, we learn as we go. So what else have I learned? A long 40 minutes. I'm really grateful. I'm really, really grateful to this program. I've grown up a lot in this program. You know, I was in some ways so old because I missed my childhood, but I was so emotionally retarded when I got here. I mean, really, really retarded. And I've learned a lot. Like, one of the first things I had to learn, which was great, my first sponsor was totally kooky. She was like a tarot card reader, and she wore this necklace that said breathe on it. And she was fantastic. She was perfect for me. I had no idea how to feel my feelings, what they were. But for me, I drank and used because I didn't want to feel. So if I was going to stay sober, I need to get a handle on this whole feelings thing and make peace with them. And that's been a process to a certain extent. But she had this chart, and she said, and it was really cool because I like visuals. You know, it had, you know, like a heart on one side and flames on the other. And she said, there are two base emotions. You're either coming from a place of love or you're coming from a place of fear. And all the other emotions are branching off of that. And I went, oh, all right, because all I could tell you before that point was I either feel good or I feel bad. I either like how I feel or I don't like how I feel. And I would drink or use over either one, you know. So I thought that was profound. And she also taught me how to breathe through my feelings. And I didn't have to own them or get stuck in them. Like my wanting to change the way I felt, even in sobriety, was driving me crazy. You know, it was creating a lot of insanity. It would cause me to do all kinds of funny things, and still does if I don't check it. You know, look outside of myself for whatever to make myself feel better. And it never works. And breathing, as simple as it sounds, has been like one of the greatest gifts, you know, to just take some deep breaths. I mean, and needless to say, I had about 2 years sober, and I decided I'd be a yoga instructor because I didn't understand how to meditate. I thought, maybe if I go to yoga instructor school, I can have that last couple minutes at the end of that workout, you know. And so that did help. That helped a lot. And I would say for a long time I did 11 and a half steps really well. But I really didn't, I prayed all the time on step 11. I journaled a lot. That really helped. That really helps me because there's some magic about putting that the rambling insanity that's in my head on paper, you know, and I just get it out. And once I get past all the minutia and the stuff that doesn't make sense, I tend to have more clarity on what's really going on, you know, because it can be a little bit unruly up there. So needless to say, I would say today the greatest thing I'm working on is the second half of step 11. You know, I was really good at praying and talking to God and asking for things. Like I said, you know, telling him what time it was, and then would you help me with that? And then I realized that I needed to meditate more. And there's so many different concepts of meditating, you know. And some it's funny, since I've been working on it, I hear it a lot more. It's not that it wasn't said a lot more before, that I just wasn't ready to hear it, you know. But I know that one of the greatest definitions of meditation I ever heard was, anytime you're ever fully in the moment, you're meditating. And I think there's magic being in the moment. because I don't have any, right now, what do I have to do right now? All I need to do is be standing here talking to you. And that's a pretty cool thing to be doing. You know, I feel really grateful to be here. I'm definitely a part of, you know, and that's a great feeling. It's really difficult to stay in the moment. It's easy for me to think about what already happened or where I'm going to be or what's, oh my God, and all, you know, like initially when I first got sober, I would say it was about a four-ring circus going on up in my brain. There was a lot going on. I mean, it was really busy. Eventually, after I worked the steps and got some recovery under my belt, I'd say it was more of a sword fight. And now I just occasionally have to check the hamster wheel where one thought will get on there and just keep going and going and going, you know. And then I go back to, okay, yeah, maybe I need to quiet my mind. You know, this whole, like, hearing what my higher power has to say back to me, hearing what is God's will. I want what God's will is for me. I always did. I just didn't understand exactly how to get it. It took me some time to figure this out. And I'm not saying I've mastered it. I'm just telling you where I am today. And that is learning how to meditate more. You know, I've gone to some group meditations. That helps me a lot because I won't get up and be rude in the group and leave. But when I'm by myself, I tried to meditate by myself the other day. Like, three things were super important I had to address right then and there, you know. So it was difficult. But it's kind of, it's like learning anything else. If I don't practice it, I mean, the only way I'm going to learn a new language at this point is if I keep practicing it. And the only way I can learn how to meditate is to keep practicing it. So if I can do it for 30 seconds, I'm stoked. You know, if it's a minute and a half, I'm happy with that. But I'm telling you, I have a much better day when I quiet my mind. Even if I'm just sitting there and I just think, okay, I'm breathing in, I'm breathing out. Sometimes I have to give my mind something to do. So I just focus on whether I'm inhaling or exhaling. And for me, I'm finally feeling like I'm finding peace. You know, like I've definitely been happy in sobriety. I've had a lot of really quality recovery. But it's, you know, taken me some time to realize how to have the serenity part. And a really wise friend said to me a couple of things. One was, don't confuse boredom with serenity. You know, because I want to shake stuff up all the time. You know, if it's going too easy and too well, it's very uncomfortable. I think there's something wrong, and I got to get in there and dig in there and find what's wrong. You know, and I don't want to do that. Like, I'm going to find whatever I'm looking for. You know, it's like that concept when you first come to meetings, you know, or even if you're coming to meetings for a long time. If I go into a meeting and I look for where I can relate and what makes sense to me, I'm going to find it. If I look for what is annoying and what I don't like, I'm going to find that too. So it's all about, for me, it's been a series of slight shifts in my perception. You know, and each time I have that slight shift in perception, life gets a little more peaceful and I grow a little more. And it ebbs and flows. You know, sometimes I'm on that spiritual beam and everything's going well. And then other times I feel like I'm just all like I'm a mess. And then you know what? When I hit that place, because I forget to do what works. And I go, oh, that's right. I think I'm going to go back to basics. And I call it rebooting my program. You know, sometimes I'll go to a couple new meetings that I've never been to before. I came here. That's how I ended up here. You know, but just doing what already works, I just forget. And I forget all the time. You know, I might tell you, oh, take some deep breaths, call somebody, you know, whatever. And then tomorrow you might need to tell me that. And my favorite thing is that the very first word of the first step says we. It doesn't say I, because I couldn't do it by myself. If I could, I would have never come here. But we can do it together. And I'm really grateful for that. I'm grateful for being here. And I think that we can close with that. So thank you so much for allowing me to be of service.